chose this afternoon to have a discussion of our relationship in marriage. And this discussion is not just for those who are married. It's for those who would marry one of these days. Okay, so we are using this opportunity not just for those who are married, but for those who are going to marry one of these days. And in fact, from my experience, it is better for those who are not yet married to even learn about marriage before they get married. Marriage, I compare it to a journey. But marriage is not a journey that you are rushing to reach a destination. Marriage is not like moving from Lagos to Orobu or from Kano to Orobu. No. Marriage, the journey of marriage is the thing itself. So as you go through marriage, like you are coming from Lagos, you get to Shagano, you get to Djibouti, you get to... That is the journey. The journey is itself the destination. And so as you go through potholes, that's part of the journey. As you go through smooth road, that's part of the journey. As you stop and look at the view, the scenery, that's part of the journey. As you stop to eat, that's part of the journey. And so the journey of marriage is to be enjoyed as we go through. Whether through the potholes or whether through the smoke, whether through the climbing side or the descending side, we need to rejoice in the relationship. The next thing I want to mention is that there are a lot of things we need to prepare before we get married. Or if we are already married, we need to learn. And I mentioned them in chapters. One of them is to learn skills. There are skills that are needed. A skill is something that you have learned and you are very good at. And so there are physical skills that we need to learn, like how to take good care of yourself. If you are alone, you can do whatever you want of your life. But if you are married, how do you take good care of yourself? How to cook? How to take care of the house? How to clean? And so on. Those are physical things, skills that we need. Because when you are going to stay together with somebody else, then those skills are important. But other important skills include skills like communication, talking, how to talk. In fact, talking is one of the easiest things everybody does. Once a child is like a few months old, blah, 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 mama, papa, and that's it. But how to talk in a relationship of marriage is so important. The words you use, the expressions you give, your facial or especially your body language, they are all so important. And we need to learn that. That when I'm talking to somebody who is my wife or husband, this is the way to talk. You may be talking in some way to your friends or to your sister or brother. That's not the way. You need the skill of communicating well. What to say, when to say it, how to say it. You need the skill of listening. A lot of us don't listen. You know, so somebody is speaking and you are in a hurry to answer. Somebody is saying something, you are in a hurry to defend yourself. We don't listen. The skill of listening is so important so that you can listen to your spouse. The skill of negotiating relationships, because there are going to be conflicts, there are going to be disagreements or misunderstandings, and how to be able to negotiate these problems so that there will be peace in the house. how to talk, how to keep quiet, how to call your spouse and say, my friend, can we talk about this? Those are all to learn. The skill of forgiveness. We have to learn to forgive. It's a skill. The skill in which you apologize. There are ways in which you apologize and the person will understand. So these are all skills that we all need. We also need attitude. Attitude is the way you look at things, your mindset. You need an attitude of humility. You need an attitude in which you respect human beings. That's why people don't respect human beings. They respect only themselves or people who are higher than them. But if you want to be successful in marriage, you need to respect human beings, period. And then, if that attitude is in you, then you can respect your wife. Then you can relate to your wife. We need to respect. We need a humble attitude. Humble attitude means, as God has said, we don't need to look at our own needs, but the needs of other people too. So that's the attitude of humility. And to be able to look out for your neighbor. Because sometimes when we are just thinking about ourselves, it doesn't work that way. So that is the right attitude. So attitudes are also important. We need to develop the right attitude. Mm-hmm. So that we will be able to continue in that relationship. Not just that. So now that we have talked about skills, we have talked about attitudes, we also need knowledge. Not just a lot, but how we need to learn. The first thing we need to learn is to learn to understand our own self. A lot of times, we have challenges in marriage because we don't know our own self. I was talking about the fact that we need skills, we need the right attitude in relationships, and one of the right attitude is to know that other people are also important. And I am bringing the next thing that we need is, we need knowledge. We need knowledge and understanding about, the first thing is ourselves. If you know yourself, you can rule yourself, you can lead yourself. So it's very important for us to know ourselves, know our makeup. I am this kind of person. This is the way I react to things. You know for yourself. I get easily angry, or I'm a little laid back. People need to push me before I move. You need to know that. There are certain personality types, all kinds of names. But you need to know yourself. And if you know yourself, then you know your strengths and your weaknesses. That is very fundamental, because if you know yourself, then you will be able to lead yourself in learning things and in growing with your relationship. Then, the next thing you need to know, that men and women are all human beings created in the image of God, but they are slightly different. If I say slightly different, people will laugh, because sometimes women are so different from men, and men are so different from women in certain ways. You need to know generally about the differences between men and women, male and female. Because the kind of marriage we are thinking about is a man and a woman. We are not thinking about any other kind of marriage. So, how are men generally like? How are women generally like? That knowledge is very important. We also need to know about the one we want to marry. And so knowledge about the person we want to marry is so important. That person is the one you're going to stay with. How are her attitudes like? What is her upbringing? What is her background? And so on. And I was telling some young people that, look, if you don't know the background of your wife or your husband, one day when you are together, something as simple as the dinner you are going to eat can be a major challenge for you. Because one of our pastors just came from Israel, went to Israel for a tour, just about 2 weeks ago. And then he was narrating the story about the food that was served most of the time in the Middle East, in Israel. A lot of the Ghanaians who went were finding it difficult to eat. Of course, it didn't have the ogbono and the okra and the pepper and the whatever that we like here, the eba and, you know, fufu and so on. But a lot of the things were not spicy. They put olive oil and so on and so on a lot of the things. And so I was telling one of the young people, suppose you go to marry somebody from her life. That is the food she will be cooked for you most of the time. So knowledge about the background is also very, very important. We need knowledge about many, many things, the culture, the upbringing, and also the training, the focus of this person. What are her goals? It's very important. So these are things we need to know. Also, in my book, I talk about the fact that love is the basis of marriage. We love somebody, and that's why we marry the person. So if you are getting into marriage, and you see somebody, and the reason you want to marry that person is not because you love the person, you care for the person, and you are willing to lay down your life for that person, then you have to step back a little bit and think twice. If you are going to marry the person because the person has money, think twice. If it's because you are running away from your family, think twice. If it's because that will give you a visa to go somewhere, think twice. Because that kind of relationship I know last. We marry because we love the person and we have grown to love the person. But the point I also make about love is that love requires hard work. If you say you love somebody, the person will say, show me your love. And show me your love means you are going to give. You are going to serve. You are going to sacrifice. Just like Jesus did. For God so loved the world that he gave. Jesus laid down his life for us. And so if you love somebody, you are going to serve the person. You are going to give to the person. You are going to share with the person. Love requires hard work. Another point I make in the book, and these are just short summaries I'm making regarding some of the titles, some of the chapters. Another point I make in the book is that love is very, very important. It's the foundation in the relationship. But there are other qualities that are also very, very important. They supplement the love of God. And that one of the qualities is commitment. Commitment. Commitment means I have made a covenant between God and man, between you, my spouse, and myself. And I want to ensure that commitment is fulfilled. We have started a journey. Commitment says, I will finish the journey with you. And so, the reason why commitment, I think, is so important. In fact, I had one of my pastor friends long time ago. He told me that, look, he thinks that in marriage, commitment is even more important than love. Because the love that we have as human beings sometimes goes up, sometimes comes down. Sometimes it's very hot, sometimes it's a little cold. But commitment means no matter the situation, I am committed to you. I've decided, you know, like we have this one, I decided to follow Jesus. You know, I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. That's commitment. So that's one of the things I mentioned in the book, that the commitment is so important, very, very crucial. And a lot of people are married and they are not committed. And so they are looking elsewhere. Commitment makes you look at outside and you realize that your wife or your husband is not the best person in the world. In fact, your wife or husband is not the richest, not the most beautiful, not the most knowledgeable, not the strongest, nothing. In every department of life, there are people who are better than your spouse. But commitment says, this is the woman or man I chose, so help me God. That is commitment. Because if you don't have commitment, you realize that before you go marry, you have certain ideas. Okay, I want a woman who is this height, this color, this profession, this. But your wife, the one you chose, may have failed in two or three of those qualities. After you marry, guess what? You are going to meet a woman or a man who has every quality that you were looking for before you got married. Are you going to leave your wife because you have seen somebody? No. Commitment, all the qualities, but I've made a decision with this person already, and that's it. So commitment is so important. Another thing I mentioned in the book is that we need to have what they normally call a love triangle. Now, when we say love triangle, normally it's a negative thing. It's more like me and my wife, and there's another woman somewhere. Or me and my wife, and there's another man somewhere who's chasing my wife. Or another woman who's chasing her husband. But this kind of love triangle I'm talking about is a love triangle between husband and wife and Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ should be the third most important person in our relationship. And I make the point that because of our human differences, and because of the fact that one is a man, one is a woman, we all start marriage a little bit apart from each other. So we start marriage, you are here, I'm there. But we are all looking to Christ. And the point I'm making is that if we all look to Christ and we all keep going, drawing nearer to Christ, it becomes like a triangle, Christ at the top, and we are all moving towards Christ. So if you do a triangle like that, and every time the right side moves up, the left side also moves up, you will see that the difference between them at the base is getting narrow and narrow. So the more husband and wife, each of us, get closer to Christ, the nearer we become, the closer we become to each other. If we begin to obey Christ more and more, you will see that a lot of the differences that we had from the beginning, our selfishness, our self-centeredness, evil behaviors and so on, they will begin to fall out. They will get become more and more converted Christians. We are Christians, but we need to keep getting converted. In fact, a Christian is one who continues to grow in grace and in knowledge throughout his or her life. Because we are all getting to the point where we will be exactly like Jesus Christ. But I'm not sure anybody was able to get that way before they died. But some were getting very, very close to the apex. And so if husband and wife are growing in grace and knowledge regularly, then the marriage will succeed lifelong, because that love triangle is very important. It's a spiritual relationship, and we need to ensure that Christ is part of that relationship. Now, one of the things I wrote in a book, that is something that one of my mentors brought to my attention long time ago. He said, look, we need to tell young people the reality of life. Marriage is sweet. God blesses marriage with a lot of things. And two heads are better than one. You have somebody to comfort up your way, to comfort you, to keep you from being lonely, and so on. So there are so many good things that we have in mind. But we need to make the youth aware that there are unforeseen hard conditions that sometimes, not every time, but sometimes hits marriages. And they should be ready for it. You remember Job? Job said, if God gives us all the good things, we accept it. Shouldn't we accept the bad things also happen? We are praying that all your marriages will be blessed. Amen. That God will open doors for you, that God will help you in every major way. However, there are things that are beyond our control. So I'll mention a few of them. In Africa, and I know my Africa is your Africa, we're all Africans. In Africa, when we are eating the cake, or we are eating the and so on during the reception, the prayer and the conversation is that next year by this time we are getting EIBU, or we are getting points that we are coming to do litany ceremony, so eat tamada amala or something. Africans don't want to have children. But what if the children are not coming? Infertility. Challenges with getting pregnant. And there are marriages, including mine, that we have to wait many, many years before we have our son. And that many marriages where they may not even have a child. What do you tell the young people who find we are counseling them? We pray for blessings. You look at Deuteronomy chapter 28, God was showering blessings on Israel. But he was saying that also curses is around. Because we live in a broken world, there are things that happen, and some of them are beyond our control. Because childlessness sometimes it happens because, of course, you have medical problems. And these medical problems, sometimes you didn't cause them. It's there. Sometimes illnesses, and they cause that. I've seen or heard of many marriages where they get pregnant, but they miscarry. They get pregnant, they miscarry. And these families are going through lots of trauma. There are families too, husband and wife, one is sick, the other is not. What do we do? These are challenges. What about financial problems? There are financial problems that a lot of people do encounter. And a lot of us have encountered periods in which you lose your job, you don't have money, you don't have income, you have to take care of the house. That happens to a lot of marriages. And many marriages will go through a period where there's no money. Sometimes to the death of somebody. Recently, now over the past 3 years, we have had situations where some of our families have lost young children in their 20s, in their 30s. Young people, they just finished university. And for no reason, an accident, they died. But that's part of the marriage. And so we need to get ourselves ready for these eventualities and realize that even if that happens, we need to be committed to each other. And we need not go somewhere else to look for somebody else. Then I want to mention the fact that we need to bring God very, very close into our relationships. When God is very close, it helps. One other thing, and I'm just mentioning very, very, in very short manner, some of the various things that I've written in the book. One of them is in regard to decision making. I mentioned that I call it cooperative decision making is a game changer in marriage. When you cooperate in making the decision, and I hope everybody listen carefully to this. This is one of the major points I want to emphasize. All of the other points I've made are important, but this is one major point I want to emphasize in relation to trying to preempt conflict, trying to preempt quarrels in marriage. A lot of us, when we were single people, when we were not married, if we want to eat dinner, of course, we just enter the kitchen and cook what we want to eat. Okay. If we want to go out, it just occurs to us in our brain, let's go out, you go. And most of the things, you want to buy something, you just buy it. It's your decision, it's your money, it's your time. That is the paradigm for singlehood decision making. Immediately, a person marries, that mode of decision making needs to change. Because then you have become a couple. You have become two. And so you don't need to make decisions alone. You need to cooperatively make that decision. And what do I mean by cooperative decision making? You see, when people are making decisions, they would normally think about the issues. And they would still say, this is what I want to do. Is this good or bad? What are the options? What are the and they'll be thinking about it in their head. But cooperative decision making in marriage is that when you immediately think about an issue, you make it available to your partner. You make it available to your partner. So let's use this simple decision about when to eat or how much to eat. So it's like 11:30, and you feel like maybe in an hour's time I'll be hungry. So you make it known to your partner and say, my friend, my wife, my husband, I feel like we're going to eat. Then she says, oh, I'm not hungry at this time, but what do you think you want to eat? And then you would mention the food you want. And then maybe the wife will say, oh, this food you want, it might take long for you to prepare, for us to prepare it. So what about this other food, which is readily available? And then you say, oh, no, we ate the same food yesterday. So I want something different. Okay, then what about this one? You see, the two of you are cooperatively working towards a choice, and actually becomes a decision. And so this one, give and take, sharing of ideas, you will see that you arrive at the food that, if the wife is the one who is going to cook, is comfortable in cooking, or the ingredients are available, or it's going to be quicker for you because you are the hungry one. And then you will cook. And then you eat. However, a lot of the issues that bring problems in marriage is when somebody has an idea or a thought in their mind, and the person is not sharing with the spouse. And so you are thinking of buying a car, and you are thinking in your head, I want a blue car, I want this type of car. Your spouse doesn't know anything about it. And so oftentimes you call your friend and talk to them about the car. You will go to your office and talk to them about your car. You will call your mommy or daddy somewhere and talk about the car. And your husband or your wife has no more money. And then one day, after you have exhausted all those discussions with them, you come to the house and you call your wife or your husband. My husband, my wife, honey, I have decided to buy a blue Toyota, whatever. And that is an announcement you are making with your husband or your wife. That brings a lot of challenges, because that other person will feel totally neglected, ignored. Her decision is not, her input is not in the decision. And so she will not feel, or he will not feel, a part of that decision. And eventually, the other partner who just made the decision by himself or herself wants this one to join. And so it's a good thing, join me and let's celebrate. And the other person will say, hey, I don't know anything about this. It's like the 6 o'clock news that you turn on the television and then you hear. Your husband says he's buying a car. Maybe the news reader will read it for you. But if you have worked together, maybe you will read the same Toyota blue car, but your spouse would have brought ideas, and you would have considered the ideas, whether they are good or bad. And so the day you are all going to buy the car, you go together, and then you are, it's more like a decision that you have made together. So this is One of the major points I want us to think about, because it brings a lot of clarity in marriage. And sometimes people feel totally ignored because of that. I have two more points I want to make. And one of them is in chapter 17. In chapter 17, marriage is a connection of two minds. And this is for the young people. As for the older people, they already know. When you are young, you often are attracted to the opposite gender by the outward appearance. He's a tall man. He is handsome. He's dark in complexion. He's muscular. You know, or he has money, or he's working in company A or company B. That's the outward. Or she's a beautiful woman. She dances very well. She sings very well. You know, and I like the way she appears, whatever that. That's the outward. But I compare the outward to the color and the fragrance of a flower. If you have a honeybee, the color and the fragrance of the flower will draw that honeybee to that flower. However, it is the nectar, the juice inside that flower, that plant, that will make the bee go and come, year in, year out. What am I saying? Our outward is like the flower. It's like the fragrance of the flower. Our inward is like the nectar or the juice that the bee will pick and make honey. So what I mean is this, we may be attracted by the outward, but it is the mind that we are married. It is the mind of the person that you are married. So if your minds don't agree, if she doesn't understand things the way you do, if his perspective or his perspective or his 8 goals in life are not just like yours or similar to yours or something that you can live with, then don't let the looks deceive you. The looks are going to change. A lot of us have black hair. People don't have black hair. A lot of us have very, very smooth faces. Not like that again. A lot of the young women have certain shape. They are older now. It's not there. Things are dropping. And the minds are the same. The minds remain. Of course, we will grow and we change. And so, a lot of times we do have situations in which husbands would say, look, I don't understand the way my wife is thinking. And the wife also said, I don't know what's going on in my husband's head. You know, and people will say, look, we are always a block ahead. We don't see eye to eye. Those are words that are spoken by husbands and wives a lot of times. Because the mind is the focal point of relationship. And so, before you choose somebody, make sure your minds are working in tandem. First, your minds are linked to God. Second, you have certain goals in common. Third, you are good. The mind is what you are going to be with. That's going to give you the comfort, the encouragement, the companionship, the conversation, and so on. Those are very, very important. And that's why you can have people who are very elderly, talking from morning to evening. And the grandchildren will be wondering, what is grandpa and grandma talking about at all? And you come, they are talking, they are eating, they are talking, they are laughing, and so on. Their minds are working together. That is very, very important in the relationship that we are thinking of. I want to complete this with one more point. And that point is chapter 18 says, aim at creating an unending romance in your journey, in your marriage. Okay. There's another point I wanted to bring again, but I believe time will need to be a program. But romance, romantic relationship, mommy prefers to spend outside the home and always says, I don't have. What do I do? So commitment is very important. What you do is what you tell him to sit down with you and discuss. Because you need to know why. Because you know that he spends a lot of money outside. So you need to gather that evidence and confront him and say, my husband, I know you spend this money on your nephews, you spend this money on your association, you spend this money on your friends. But whenever I need money in the house for your own children or for us, you say you don't have money. Why? His priority may not be right. His priority may. There are people like that whose priority are not right. So you need to talk to that person about it. There's another question, are other forms of sexual satisfaction like the use of sex toys okay in marriage? Especially when they feel they are helping their husband to satisfy their high sex drive. I don't think so. You see, there are so many innovations that are now available. And so, if you have a sex drive that is hard, and you are young, then look for a husband, a man, who also has the energy to satisfy that sex drive. Don't have sex toys. Because sex toys are not humans. They are not what is intended as far as marriage. So you see, one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit is self-control. We all want to eat as hard as we can. But when we eat up to a point, we say, let's hold on. We're not eating anymore. We all want to talk as much as we want. And you talk a little bit, you stop. The same way, if you have certain sexual urges, you need to pray about it. You need to rein it in within the context of your marriage. If your husband is not that strong, then bear with that strength that he has. You'll be able to satisfy him once in a week. Make it an enjoyable moment so that next week he comes back again. But don't say, I want every day, and my husband can do it only twice in a week. And so I'm going to buy sex toys. Now the sex toys will then lead to other things, and leads to other things, and they are all deviations from the normal. So I would then recommend sex toys. They don't have any place at all in marriage. They don't at all. If you have sex, high sex drive, there are some things you need to consult, you know, specialists. You consult, you know, counselors and so on, and they will be able to help you do. Sometimes your main sex drive can also be controlled if you get yourself involved in some vigorous exercises. And so, instead of just My husband can satisfy me once a week. The remaining times of the week, I'll go to the gym, or I'll jog, I'll do exercise, or I'll play a game, or I'll do something. That will give me satisfaction without necessarily making it sexual. Okay. So these are the questions I've had. But I'm very, very much concerned about the fact that our young people need to prepare themselves very well. So as I conclude, I want to say relationships are very, very important. And the young people must get themselves ready. I think I have another question I want to answer. Okay. The question is, I'm made to understand that husbands and wives are one. Question. I notice or observe that majority of our leaders, pastors and their wives, don't sit together during services. What kind of example are they showing to our younger ones? Is this right? A. Pastors in Nigeria. Somebody has noticed that you don't sit together as husbands and wives. I will tell you, my sister or my brother, who has that question, that I've been sitting together with my wife in church service for all these 45 years. Except when we have assignments and maybe I need to perform some duty, so I go to the front or they give me a different seat. But most times, we stay together. In fact, I know a lot of places I go to, they stay together. Okay, but we need to think about that, because this is a concern that somebody is sharing. And there may be situations where husband and wife cannot sit together. Maybe for health reasons, one wants to sit far at the back so that they can make use of some facilities. But somebody is asking, why should husbands and wives sit together? We are a family. And when we get together, like in church setting, we sit together. The family, husband and wife, they sit together. That's okay. If there's no reason at all, that's the tradition that GCIWCG we have had all these years. There are some churches when you go, they have women sit at one corner, one side, and men sit at the other side. That's okay. That's the church's tradition. But GCIWCG, we encourage married couples to sit together with their children. Except when the children grow up a little bit, and the children like to sit among the youth. That's okay. But when they are younger, husband, wife, the children are together. And in the children that I attend, I can see most times that's what happens. But if in your area is not happening, I want our pastors to see they will conform to that, because that brings a lot of joy to the young people. But the reason is that is the tradition of this year. That's the tradition of the relationship. And it helps to know that I'm sitting by my wife, sitting by my husband. That there are things that we can share as the sermon is going on, as the service is going on. We are clapping together, we are dancing together, and we are listening to the message together. It's very, very helpful. And sometimes the pastor is saying something, and then you just tap your wife, or your wife taps you and say, hey, are you listening? This is what we were saying in the house yesterday. This is on. And then you take me to the zone, we will talk about it. Something like that. But if your wife is sitting in front and you are sitting at the back, I don't think it's a good example. So, if there are no medical reasons or no assignment reasons. There are people who are assigned. He's a pianist. The pianist cannot sit with the wife or the husband. Well, this is somewhere. Or maybe he's a music group. And so the wife will be singing, or the husband will be singing. And so that one, they don't necessarily have to sit together because they've assigned it. He's in charge of the instrument. And for that reason, they cannot sit together. But I hope if there are no medical or assignment reasons, then it's best for husbands and wives to sit together. It's just good. That's that. Don't bring issues into the church. I know people who have issues, and so they don't want to sit together. But that's me. Okay. So whether pastor or other church members, it's best for husband and wife to sit together with your children, and you'll enjoy the services together. Okay, let me see if there are any other questions. If there are no other questions, I would say, okay, another question. What about a situation where your wife is cheating? As I was researching for this book, I read quite a bit, and maybe not in Nigeria, maybe not in Africa, but in the West, a lot of cheating is happening among wives. A lot of women are cheating. In fact, it seems like the men and the women are almost at the same level now, as far as cheating is concerned. But in Africa, too, I know, listening to some programs, you will see that some of the women are cheating. And I've heard of some in counseling situations where it has come out that the women are cheating. But so what about the situation where your wife is cheating? The same procedure, coming out from your wife, why she's cheating? Why is she cheating? She might not. She might say, I'm not cheating. But find out. Is there anything you are doing that is not making her happy? There could be so many excuses, so many reasons, but it's not excusable. Maybe you are crying in the house. Maybe the man is not able to satisfy your needs, like this sex story question about. But you need to discuss with your husband and say, look, I need this amount of satisfaction. I want you to help me. Or go to a counselor and talk about it. Because if you don't work on the root, cheating is one of the causes that can lead to divorce, that can lead to separation. Because once you begin to cheat, you are undermining the foundation of the relationship. Not the foundation. Because I ask a lot of people, what is it that I cannot do with other women, like my mother or my sister, but I can do with you, my wife? It's a sexual relationship. I can talk with my sisters. We can laugh together. I can do business with them. They can cook for me to eat. They can sweep the house. They can do so many things. Even my boy friends, we can sweep and do things together. We can laugh and chat and so on. A sexual relationship is the bond. And in that particular one thing, see, you can do, if you're a woman, you can do a lot of things with your girlfriends. You can go to a party together, you can dance together, you can travel together, you can do so many things together. You can do with your mommy, talk with her, and so on. Your brothers, you can talk to. You can do so many things with every other human being. That sex is reserved in marriage. And so once you take that one out of marriage, then you are destroying the foundation of this marriage. And I believe it's one of the things we need to work on. I read a lot of things on it, and if you read a book, you see several situations like this. Matthew 5, verse 22. But I said to you that whoever divorces his wife, except on grounds of sexual immorality, also said to commit adultery. Whoever marries a woman who has been divorced commits adultery. But somebody is saying, but this verse, Christ was talking about the basis of divorce. In the Old Testament, the men there were given so much leeway, so much rights over their wives, that sometimes we joke that if she cooks and there's too much salt in the soup, you can use that as a reason to divorce her. I divorced you because your soup was too salty. I mean, we joke about it. It's so flimsy excuses. So Christ was telling them that, look, those kinds of things are not necessary. When you are married, you are married. Except on the grounds of sexual immorality. In other words, your wife has left you and slept with another man. That's what was the situation. If that happens, then you need to divorce her. You know? And here, Christ was saying, once somebody is divorced, nobody else should marry that person. In the Old Testament, was very, very serious. In the New Testament, there are situations in which people get divorced, but they still are able to marry. And that's a little bit complicated, but if somebody leaves, so, for example, let's say the wife, the woman who is cheating now, says, no, you can't satisfy me, you know, so I don't like you, I'm going. And there's nothing you can do about it. Then, it will seem like it's not your fault. She just wants to leave. Or the man says, you cannot satisfy me, so I'm leaving, I'm going to marry another one. Then it's not the woman's fault. So, there are situations like that in which you look at and say, look, it's not your fault. So, if you have another person you want to marry, you are free to marry. So that person has behaved like an unbeliever. If you are a believer, you wouldn't do that. Commitment will be there. And so on. So on this note, I want to say, I thank you very much. The book is still available, and those who are coming to Ghana, about 9 of them, you could ask any of them to buy one for you, so that in future we can discuss them. My hope is that it would enhance our relationship a little bit. It will also help the younger ones to make the right decisions. You know, learn about who they are. Learn about who they can live with. Learn about the other people. And involve God a lot in the selection. Because the selection is very, very, very important. If you select well, it helps you to succeed. If you don't select well, like you are playing the football games now, if your selection is poor, you might get poor results. But if you take time, and one of the words I use, one of the phrases I use was that it's better to wait and get the right person to marry rather than to hurry up so that you marry early. So better wait, and God will bless all. So on this note, I want to thank our national pastor, Pastor Meshach Genereka. I want to thank Joseph and Faith and Danny and all the technical staff for making sure I'm able to link up. But right now, we are so busy, we should have done this about 3 hours ago, but I was busy at the convention center. We were cleaning the place, getting it ready, so that those who come will see a beautiful venue. We want to request that all of you, whether you are coming or not, that you pray for us, that the conference will go on well, that we will also have this Ghana's 50th anniversary. We are praying that in a few years' time, we will also have a celebration of Nigeria's GCI 50 years anniversary. May God bless us all, and thank you very much.